Britain doesn't do torture. We don't practice it and we don't condone it and we don't seek to benefit from it when other countries do it. That has been the position of successive governments for a long time now. It was certainly the stated position of the last government, stated firmly and often. But it's been questioned time and again by critics ever since 9/11, and it's been unravelling pretty quickly over this past week. The trickle of secret papers during the High Court case brought by six former Guantanamo Bay inmates accusing the government of complicity in torture has become more of a running stream. So what has been emerging, and what are the implications of making public so much secret material about the detailed work of British intelligence officers in the field? In a moment, I'll be talking to the former Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith. First, our diplomatic correspondent, James Robbins.
Only 4 or 5 years ago, it was surely unthinkable that MI5 and MI6 could be forced to disgorge information about recent operations. But British courts are no longer content to accept a blanket ban on publication. So this week, the High Court has channeled a series of eye-catching secret papers into the glare of public scrutiny. They're papers called for by lawyers for the six former detainees, British nationals or British residents, who are seeking to show that Britain was content to get very close to their torture overseas without actually participating directly. Now we can read all these documents, minus admittedly the parts redacted, that is, blacked out, on grounds that revealing those sections would damage national security. So, in March 2002, an MI5 officer who interviewed Omar Deghaez, a Libyan-born British resident, then being held by the Americans at Bagram in Afghanistan, reported back to London.
We're due to see him 2100 local time and propose that we treat this as our last opportunity to get the full truth from him. If he sticks to his story and just gives us a few more details, we propose disengaging and allowing events here to take their course.
Omar Deghaez was put on a rendition flight by the Americans to Guantanamo Bay. Other documents disclosed to the court show that was exactly what Jack Straw as Foreign Secretary and Tony Blair as Prime Minister wanted. Here's part of a telegram from Jack Straw as Foreign Secretary to Sir Christopher Mayer, British Ambassador in Washington, on the 10th of January 2002.
A specialist team is currently in Afghanistan seeking to interview any detainees with a UK connection to obtain information on their terrorist activities and connections. We therefore hope that all those detainees they wish to interview will remain in Afghanistan and will not be among the first groups to be transferred to Guantanamo. A week's delay should suffice. UK nationals should be transferred as soon as possible thereafter.
The telegram ends simply, Straw. But do the documents released so far demonstrate that Britain abused Deghaez and his fellow litigants, or that Britain was complicit in torture? Another fascinating document from the 11th of January 2002 is the guidance from MI6, the Secret Intelligence Service, to officers overseas about acceptable conduct. One passage says,
"It appears from your description that they may not be being treated in accordance with the appropriate standards. Given that they are not within our custody or control, the law does not require you to intervene to prevent this."
Does that all sound a bit complicit, if harsh interrogation or even torture by others is getting results? Well, the guidance does go on immediately to say,
"That said, Her Majesty's government's stated commitment to human rights makes it important that the Americans understand that we cannot be party to such ill treatment, nor can we be seen to condone it. In no case should they be coerced during or in conjunction with an SIS interview with them."
There are hundreds more pages of documents already disclosed, and potentially up to 500,000 government papers which may be made available during this case. So more and more seems likely to flow into the public domain.
That was James Robbins, our diplomatic correspondent. Well, now I can talk to Lord Goldsmith, the former Attorney General. He was Attorney General under the Labour government for 6 years. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Can you answer any of those very important questions that James Robbins raised there? Do the documents released so far demonstrate that we have been complicit in torture?
I can't answer these questions, and that's one of the reasons that the inquiry which has now been set up, which I welcome, we'll need to look into that. It's right that there is an inquiry. I've been saying that for, frankly, and since Binyan Mohammed came back and started making allegations about UK complicity. I wish my own administration, as it were, the Labour government, had set it up, but it's none the worse for that. that it's the new administration that's done so.
Well, your own administration perhaps didn't set it up because it didn't want those questions raised. And the reason it didn't want those questions raised was that, indeed, it was complicit in torture.
Well, I've no reason to know that that's right. But
you suspect it may be.
Well, that's why I think it's very important that these allegations are properly investigated. That is the whole point. And either they're true, in which case there's a serious issue here that needs to be dealt with, or they're not true, or they're exaggerated, or they're misunderstood, in which case people who are doing a decent job need to be exonerated. What we can't have is these allegations continuing to fester.
But on the face of it, there is enough information out there at the moment, isn't there, and there's much more to come, as we know, that suggests, at the very least, very strongly indeed, that the former Foreign Secretary, two former Foreign Secretaries, did know a great deal about what was going on, and we, the public, were misled.
I find what's interesting about this, and I don't know the answer to that question, John, I find what's interesting about this, you may recall that I was responsible for negotiating the release of the British nationals from Guantanamo. And there were many issues that we had in relation to Guantanamo, the whole idea that people could be detained in a sort of legal black hole, that they weren't getting proper review of their cases, that they might never be released, quite apart from suggestions that they might be put on trial and subjected to the death penalty. But one of the allegations which wasn't being made at the time, including from the information I was getting from those who had had consular interviews with the detainees, was allegations that at that stage they were being mistreated in Guantanamo. The whole thing was wrong, but there weren't allegations of torture in Guantanamo. So I just don't know, but that's very, very important that these allegations are dealt with. It's important for our reputation as well as for the reputation of the people involved.
Because we do know, and I emphasise know, certain things, don't we? We know that agents of this government, of our government, have been present. I was going to say when people were being tortured. We don't know that, but we know that they have been there after people have been tortured or during the course of that process. Not that they were there necessarily in the cell or in the torture chamber, but they knew what had been going on when they talked to those people. Some of the evidence already on the public record, record says that.
Well, you've got the benefit of having read all this and I haven't. Or James Robbins has and I haven't.
Yeah, well, I have the documents, some of the documents in front of me which speak.
Which I don't have. I know this is the allegation that was made particularly by Binyan Mohammed, and that's why it seemed to me very important at that stage, and I continue to hold this view, that those allegations should properly be investigated. One needs to know whether this is a suspicion. Definitely, of course, if people knew that someone had been mistreated, as a way of getting answers to questions which, for example, we wanted to put, and then said, well, I'm going to turn a blind eye to that, but here's another list of questions. That's the real problem. Of course it is.
There will be people listening to this programme, though, many people who'll say, politicians are being lily-livered about this. Let's take a scenario in which MI6 turns up in Afghanistan or wherever it happens to be. They go into a prison or a jail where somebody has clearly been tortured. That man probably is a terrorist, and he has given some information under torture which could prevent a bomb going off in a British shopping centre. Are you seriously telling us, they will say, that the MI6 should not act on that information? It would be criminally irresponsible not to do so.
No, and you have to draw a distinction between use of evidence for two purposes. One is, you get information that there's a bomb in a shopping centre, of course you have to act on that. However, it was obtained. You have to act on it operationally. Of course, you've got to go and look for the bomb in the shopping centre and try to prevent innocent people being killed. The difference comes about when that information could be used for court proceedings, and Convention Against Torture prevents that taking place.
Isn't that almost semantics?
I don't think it is semantic. I think it's it also illustrates the significant, the importance of maintaining the right stance in relation to detainees. It is a very strong discouragement against mistreating them, because there will be sanctions for the mistreatment of people, and there will be an inability to use that material in court, which is the principal purpose which is being used. But if you happen to know, you turn up, someone has been tortured, not by you, plainly it'd be very, very wrong for MI6 to be involved in torture, to encourage the torture. But they turned up and they told, well, look, terribly sorry, this is what we've done to this guy. But actually, he has told us that in Shepherd's Bush there's a bomb which is going to go off tomorrow morning. Now, of course, you can't ignore it.
But to take it a step further and to put it very bluntly, many people will say, if we can get information that can save the lives of innocent people, perhaps many lives, by doing something that is repugnant to us, well, we've got to grit our teeth and do it.
There was a very wise statement made by a former Israeli Supreme Court president, and he said, it's the fate of democracies. Actually, it was exactly in the context of torture and saying it was prohibited. It's the fate of democracies that you do, from time to time, have to fight with one hand tied behind your back, because the values for which democracies stand and the values for which we are fighting are more important than, as it were, an instant win on that occasion.
And when you were Attorney General, did you say that in those terms to people like Tony Blair and Jack Straw and David Miliband?
David wasn't Foreign Secretary later. But they, I think they had no doubt at all. I mean, I was the one who was particularly difficult, for example, about whether our people should remain in Guantanamo and insisted that they be released. So they, I think, were in no doubt at all of the stance that I took in relation to that.
But they didn't necessarily agree with you.
Well, that's what we have to see. That's what we have to see, and that's why it's very important that we get on with this inquiry. I mean, I'm concerned, and I said this in the House of Lords when it was announced, I'm concerned that the inquiry is being held off for a while for legal proceedings, and I have all people understand why that may be necessary. But I'm concerned that it shouldn't be put off too long. Let Sir Peter Gibson and his colleagues get on with this now.
Lord Goldsmith, many thanks.